This is the Blood and Platelets podcast, tales of transplant survivors with Brandon, Alex, and Chrissy. We are genetically modified humans who have come together to tell real stories, real emotions, real experiences, to fill a void for patients, encourage, give hope, and inspire those going through treatment and beyond.
Welcome back! this is the Blood and Platelets podcast with Alex and Brandon and Chrissy. We've actually been off for a little while and we apologize. Life just sort of got in the way, but we are really excited because today we're doing an episode focused on an incredible organization called A3M, Asians for Miracle Marrow Matches. Say that three times fast. But A3M has had an incredibly instrumental role in all three of our experiences with our disease, with finding matches, you know, understanding the whole process of going through a transplant, what's needed, and being a huge support for us. So we wanted to kind of come and, you know, introduce and give A3M a bigger platform as well to illuminate what they do, why, all that sort of stuff. So what I want to do is first and foremost introduce the executive director, Susan. And Susan, how long have you now been executive director? 2 years?
Five.
5 years.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
That's where
Time flew by.
Yep. Wow. 5 years. Mm-hmm. So why don't you give us a little background on you and how you came to A3M and then sort of the vision you had and have seen it grow from there, and we can just kind of go from there.
Yeah. So I started 5 years ago, as I mentioned, and I always been in the public health field. I mean, that's something that, you know, I went to school for. Most of my early career was actually in language access, doing more health disparity stuff. And I think it just started because I was raised by my grandma, and she passed away pretty suddenly when I was pretty young. Mm-hmm. And I really think that if she understood her illness, she had an aneurysm. And I really think that if she understood her illness, if she knew how to take care of herself, if information was given to her in her language, she had access to resources, she would be with us a lot longer. Yeah. So I think that was kind of like the beginning of, you know, my interest in public health. Yeah. And the reason I took the A3M position was because I had little kids. And, you know, I had three kids under 8 at that time. And I was like, if I'm going to leave them, you know, to go to work, it has to be a job that is meaningful. It has a, you know, a job that has purpose. I think I also selfishly wanted to make sure that, you know, I was bringing these kids into a world that had kindness, had goodness, you know, and I could always tell them that there's always more good than there is bad, mm-hmm. you know, so that was important too. So that's kind of like a selfish reason.
A good selfish reason.
So so I started, you know, A3M, and at that time, I think we were in the process of restructuring.
Yes.
So there was a lot of things that, you know, we had to do, like, you know, we had to kind of rebuild the recruitment team and also our volunteer program. So there was a lot to do, and we were just so fortunate to have such an amazing team. You know, Yumi was there, Christopher joined. So it was a really good time, just really good energy.
And maybe actually go back and just if there are listeners, you know, mm-hmm. or patients that are listening that don't quite know exactly what A3M does.
Yeah.
Maybe explain what that is. So when you say recruitment, what are you doing?
Okay. So A3M is a recruitment center for Be the Match, which is the national registry for the U.S. So it's operated by the National Marrow Donor Program. So in our capacity, we reach out to individuals and to see if they're interested in joining the registry. So our focus is primarily on not only increasing but also diversifying the registry. Our focus is, you know, going out to communities of color and doing outreach, education, and really try to put on as many people onto the registry as possible to give patients better odds of finding a donor match.
Yeah, awesome.
So as I understand, Be the Match is the registry.
Yeah.
So why is there a separate A3M? Like, can you explain why there's a need for Be the Match to have like a subdivision, Atrium?
And the diversity part of it, too.
Yeah, so Atrium is a recruitment center for Be the Match. So we are one. There's other recruitment centers out there. Our service area is Southern California. And being so diverse, I think, you know, for us, our reach is mostly to the ethnic diverse communities. And that's important because patients, if they're looking for a donor, they're most likely going to find one within their own ethnic background or their own ethnic ancestry. So it's important because the percentages of ethnically diverse donors out there are pretty low. So that means that a patient, if they're, for example, if they're Chinese, if they're Latino, there's a lower chance of them finding a match than if they're Caucasians. You know, like I think for Asians, there's like what, 5% of people on the registry that are Asian Pacific Islander descent. And I think there's 7% Latino. So those are pretty, you know, pretty small odds of
really low,
yeah. You know, if a patient is searching, you know, we want to increase those odds. So for us, our outreach and our recruitment is mainly in communities that, you know, are underserved, communities of color.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that, you know, you had mentioned actually, interestingly, in that little intro is about your grandmother having language be a part of it.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of A3M because you have, of your recruiters, you have those that can speak native languages with Chinese, Japanese, Vietnamese, Hispanic, you know, et cetera. So there can be a language barrier within ethnic communities where they don't have the information because they can't get it. And so that's sort of one of the things that you guys certainly focus on, right?
Yeah, definitely. All of our recruiters are bilingual. They are bicultural. So like you mentioned, we do have Cantonese, Mandarin, Tagalog, Vietnamese, Korean, Spanish speakers in our staff. So it's, you know, we're able to go out to the communities to do outreach in languages and in ways that are meaningful to the community.
Right. That's great. I think that's hugely important. Thank you.
Yeah.
Why don't we introduce also the other two fabulous team members that we have here. We have Athena, for the amount of years that I've known you, I can't pronounce your last name.
So that, if you just take it step by step.
Asclepiades.
Asclepiades, yeah.
Asclepiades.
But if you're Greek, you would say Asclepiades.
I was going to say it's a Greek.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I didn't even know the proper way to pronounce it until, like, later on. And I was like, oh, I've been saying it, not the right way my whole life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
Oh, no.
Well, we have Athena, and she is the Director of Development and Communications. And then we also have Chris Chen, who is Outreach and Recruitment Lead. And the two of you, Chris, actually, how long have you been? You're relatively new, right?
I've been with A3M for about 3.5 years, going on 4th in August.
Okay. Yeah. And Athena, how long have you,
she's the newbie.
Yeah, you are the newbie, I guess, technically.
August, but
you've been,
because of you,
yeah,
I was
you've been
volunteering
for 10 years, 12 years, yeah. Well, why don't you, okay, Athena, why don't you talk about what you do, and then we'll toss it to Chris.
Sure. So, I was in recruitment for starting here. Now I've transitioned into development and communication. So basically, fundraising, you know, trying to make sure we can operate and have a budget to work with, because every nonprofit needs funding. So that's important for us to stay afloat. And then the communications aspect, so social media, you know, communications newsletter, that sort of thing is definitely what I am now working on. So it's a new challenge because I've been doing recruitment for some time, but I think we all have that equal, I guess, goal in the end is what A3M does is to get more donors.
Getting donors, it all comes
back to that. Yeah. So the fundraising, it all comes back to trying to get more donors and paying our staff and making sure we can survive because it is hard.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And Chris, your recruitment, and do you have a focus of the group? What's your focus?
Originally started as the Chinese community outreach recruiter, mm-hmm. Speaking full Mandarin. Mm-hmm. So I still technically am still holding that hat because there's not a lot of Mandarin speakers out actually in the country. Mm-hmm. As recruitment would be the match, there's probably two as far as I know. Mm-hmm. One is Northern California, and I'm one here in Southern California.
Oh, wow.
So there's not a lot of multilingual recruiters out there in the nation.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
So
how many patient, like, in terms of the patient focus you guys have, mm-hmm. how many of those need some sort of communication help, like in the Chinese community?
It really depends on their network. A lot of them are multilingual or able to speak English. Mm-hmm. But in the past, I've worked with about 5 Chinese patients, mm-hmm. And they've all had somewhat connections to the Chinese community or Chinese church community. Mm-hmm. Along with that, too, is if any Chinese person growing up, they know of ETTV. It's like their national, international broadcasting news station, and I had to go on and be the spokesperson, which was quite interesting. Because Mandarin is not my, I grew up speaking Mandarin and English, but who knows how to say bone marrow, in the native language and growing up? You don't. So it's something that I had to learn on the way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. Very cool. And you actually have an upcoming drive at UCLA.
Go Bruins, yes. So we actually have a lot events at UCLA as well as different college campuses. Because right now would be the match. What we're really trying to do is add more student presence, student involvement, mm-hmm. because our catchment group is 18 to 44, mm-hmm. primarily focused for people to register. Right. It's not because that if people are over the age of 44, we don't want them. Mm-hmm. It's just that we're literally transplanting a person's immunities to another person who really needs it. So that provides a higher percentage of like better outcomes for those patients, definitely.
Absolutely.
So Be the Match saw an opportunity to be more intentional in going on college campuses. Mm-hmm. So nationally, we're really focused on very diverse populated schools.
Awesome. How would someone find out where a drive is going to be?
So for A3M, we have a website, mm-hmm. that you could check out our, if you look at our website, there's a calendar and you can find our events. Mm-hmm. Along with that too is Be the Match has moved registration to be more easily accessible. Mm-hmm. It's all moved online now. So people could actually register and a swab kit could be mailed to them. But keep in mind, if you are registering online, I would encourage you to be mindful of the envelope that the swabs come in and that you would swab and return it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say like 60 to 70% of people who actually register online receive the swabs in the mail, don't return the swabs after. So definitely encourage to be mindful and remember to swab and mail it back.
And the A3M website is www.a3mhope.org.
That's correct.
Reading it off your t-shirt.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, pretty good. I thought it was just a3m.org.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but it's a3mhope.org. So if anyone wanted to go to that, cool. Thanks. Do you guys want to talk about how you got involved with A3M from a patient standpoint?
Yeah, I think that's.
Go ahead, Brandon.
Want me to start?
Yeah.
Okay, so when I was diagnosed in 1999, it was on May 19th, and for those in the Japanese American community, you know that the Tigers basketball tournament is at the end of May. So by the time I was diagnosed, somehow A3M heard about my illness, and by the time the Tigers basketball tournament kicked off at the end of the month, there were already signs, there were already drives. And yeah, people were taking pictures or telling my mom and dad, like, hey, there's pictures of Brandon out in the, the tournament. Like, what is this? Like, people didn't know I was sick.
Oh, wow.
So my parents were wondering how A3M found out, Because we never heard of A3M before then. We mm-hmm. had really like no need to, not no need, but we yeah. didn't hear about it.
It was new. Yeah. It was yeah. new it was, at that time.
And yeah, it was new.
This was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, and then so we met, I think the ED at the time was Ruby Ogawa. Or I'm not sure if she was the ED, but Ruby was the point of contact who we did everything with. And yeah, she came into the hospital and spoke to my parents and I more about A3M. And I think after she explained it, I know for my parents, they felt more at ease mm-hmm. knowing that someone is out there searching for a bone marrow match. I'm not even sure if my parents knew I needed a bone marrow donor. Mm-hmm. I know I didn't for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, for me, I didn't know much what was going on.
Yeah.
But after they came in and explained like who we are, who A3M is, and what they did, I think it brought a sense of ease to my parents. It brought a sense of hope. Knowing that they were already out there at the basketball tournament, one of the biggest tournaments down here for the Japanese American community. And yeah, from 1999, I've been, you know, volunteering with A3M at their events, doing public speaking for them, just advocating for the great work that they've done, they're doing, and going to continue to do, because I know they brought me a lot of hope, brought my family a lot of hope, and that's what they're pretty much here to do. You know, they're out here trying to find these bone marrow donors for those in need, and all you can really do is give these people hope, and that's mm-hmm. definitely what you guys provided.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, A3M will always have a soft spot in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do anything for them. Yeah.
Did you figure out how they found out about you?
No.
Was it just through the community, probably? Family member or friend?
I mean, yeah, I think.
Had known, maybe?
Yeah, maybe you had to have been through family friend or.
Yeah, something, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, because the 19th, and then so the tournament was probably the 30th, 31st. So within 2 weeks, they knew, I guess, needed a bone marrow transplant. They printed flyers, posters.
There's photos of the, I think, the tournament.
Uh-huh, I have like a poster board in, I think, my parents' house. They have it in like the newspaper clippings.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I did a lot through A3M. I was going to go to Japan to do kind of a TV recording to have more people in Japan register.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like 13. I was going with like this lady that I didn't really know. Like, I'd never been on a plane before then. So like, I was like, I don't think I should go. Like, I'll do anything here.
Yeah.
Whatever you want me to do. But flying all the way to Japan. And yeah, my parents weren't going to go with me. It was just me and Ruby. So it would have been.
Do you even speak Japanese?
No. So I don't know what they would have done with me. They would have like dubbed it or something. Yeah. Voiceover for that.
Yeah. 20 years ago though, man.
Yeah.
I think I saw you on MySpace. Like, it was I saw your story there. No.
Could have been. Yeah. I mean, a lot has changed since then, but
20 years ago.
Yeah. But one thing that will never change,
what's MySpace?
I know MySpace. But yeah, one thing that hasn't changed is my love and support for A3M, and we'll do anything for you guys. So, yeah,
it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Anything?
Wow.
Write that down.
Yeah.
Oh, we got it on recording.
I'll edit it out. Don't worry.
Alex, you want to?
Yeah, that's really cool. My story with A3M, I think it started when I got to City of Hope. And City of Hope at that time in 2014, they had an office in the NIMI Center at City of Hope. And Be the Match had a had office there. And I guess they, you know, communicated with A3M, and A3M reached out to me. And I remember who it was. It was Marjorie. It was Marjorie. She called me, and she wanted to come over. She said she lives in Cerritos, too. I live in Cerritos. And, yeah, and she came over after work, and she became a part of my life. She came over to my house, like, almost every week. She, along with all of Be The Match and A3M, like Brandon said, the biggest thing that you guys provided me was hope. At that time, I didn't have a match, so I was in the hospital getting chemo treatment for, I think it was for 2 months before they realized I needed to have a bone marrow transplant. And then that's when I found out that I didn't have a match, because when they first told me you need a match and it has to be somebody close to your ethnicity, I was thinking, no problem. Chinese people, like, yeah, no problem.
There's a lot of you.
Yeah, there's a lot of us. And then that's when I found out the disparity and the unevenness and the in the registry. You know, we are, and I mean the minorities, like the Asians, Hispanics, African Americans, all of us, people of mixed race, we are significantly underrepresented. It's a big disparity. I mean, Caucasians are like, I don't know, when I was in the hospital searching, it was like 70%.
77. It's 77 now.
Yeah, and it's been like 5 years. It's still like that. And it blew my mind, because, you know, as I was at City of Hope, I would go to the lobby all the time and go to, you know, get blood transfusions or whatever, and I'd see other people that were next to me and, you know, getting blood transfusions or whatnot, and I would talk to them, and most of them were Caucasians, and I would be like, oh, cool, I'm looking for a match, like, you know, I'm Chinese, and they've been searching for months, and I have no match. And then that's when they told me, like, oh, well, when I got diagnosed, I needed a match, and they went in the registry, and there were like 20 or 30, there were guys and girls, there were older people, there were younger people, there were, you know, people of different backgrounds, of, you know, and then I remember them explaining to me, like, yeah, we could choose, like, who we want our donor to be. Like, I could choose. I could be, I want a 17-year-old, or I want a 20-some-year-old, or I want a, you know, whatever. And that made me feel really sad, because it's just it's a natural occurring injustice, you know? So A3M came into my life, and at that time I really, really wanted to, because I didn't have a match, I wanted to use my story and use my voice to let people know that we need to bring more awareness to this. And I've been on this journey with A3M ever since then. Marjorie and all of the team at A3M, you know, worked extra hard to try to promote my story, and they made flyers and made commercials and came to my house all the time, and we were begging people. And it was really, even though A3M didn't find my match, it was very healing at the time, because we knew that our efforts together, me as the patient and A3M as the organization doing this, we're bringing more awareness, we're bringing more hope, and we are recruiting more people. More people are registering, and that translates into more people, more lives saved. Mm-hmm. And so after my life was saved, and it was from a cord blood, by the way, and I know A3M and Be The Match kind of promotes cord blood donations now too, which is awesome. It's on their website as well. But yeah, after my life was saved, I still feel very much a part of A3M, and I think A3M will forever be a part of me. And I'm just grateful for you guys, and I think that you guys are doing an amazing job, and hopefully we can, you know, save more lives and bring more awareness and mm-hmm. bring more hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amen.
Amen. So thank you to all of yeah. you and Chris and Susan and Athena. I mean, I have a, you know, there's so much to talk about. Like each one of you individually has helped me through my journey to get me to this point. I mean, Athena has been instrumental. She hasn't been with A3M the whole time, but it feels like she was. I mean, it's also because of, you know, mix match, and also because of, you know, Athena's background and how she got involved with A3M, and she was always doing drives. And Athena really showed me the importance of A3M and Marjorie, and I really appreciate Marjorie for everything she did.
I still have your voicemail saved.
Yeah.
His first voicemail from when he was like, it was in the film, but he's like, you do bone marrow stuff.
Yeah.
And your cousin told me to like call you. Yeah. So he was very confused as to what he needed. And I feel like a lot of patients can relate because unless you have something in your family, you don't know what this is. Mm-hmm. And it's very overwhelming because it's like your own journey to get better, but it's also this concept of like, oh, now I need a stranger that I don't know is out there to save my life. It's very, I'm sure I'm not in your shoes, but I can imagine it's just a lot to take in.
A3M really opened my eyes to what was really going on in this leukemia bone marrow transplant world, and it's very, very important stuff that you guys are doing. So
and I got started because of Chrissy.
Yeah.
We're all kind of interrelated.
Chrissy's the longest, I think, involved person with A3M.
It's been like since the 80s, right?
Dang.
Now, it was really heartwarming when we saw your name from the patient board go over to the match board to go over to the post-transplant board.
Yeah.
We celebrated that. So, yeah.
That was pretty amazing. Well, I started out, what year was that?
2008 it was.
No,
so,
before that.
Was it before that?
Yeah,
I think it was
2007
then. In any case, so my introduction to A3M was actually a little different than you guys. My grandmother, she was very much connected in the Japanese community in Southern California. She kind of knew everyone. Everyone knew her. And she knew Sharon Sugiyama, who started A3M. And Sharon started it because of her nephew. Her nephew, who had passed away from leukemia because he couldn't find a match. And Sharon, God bless her soul, she decided to do something about that. And so she created A3M from the ground up. And my grandmother knew Sharon. And so when I was diagnosed, and they had said pretty quickly, actually, for me, because they tested my brother right away. At my hematologist, we knew something was bad because they called my whole family into our appointment. And they said, we need Randy, my brother, to absolutely come. So we said, well, okay, what is this? So my doctor, my hematologist at the time, he explained the whole, you know, issue of being multiracial and how difficult. He had actually set the precedent to us. He said, this is going to be a really difficult challenge for you because he said, you know, I just know there's not a lot of half Japanese, half Caucasian people on the registry. And so we've got to see if your brother's a match. So they tested him right away. And unfortunately, came back that Randy was not, at the time, a good enough match. And so my grandma, I think she might have called Sharon. Somehow, we were put into touch, but because of that connection. And so immediately, the recruiter at the time who was here was Cliff Okada, and he's actually now a doctor I don't know if you ever met. Did you meet Cliff? He was great. So he was my, I think he was in med school maybe, but like when he was volunteering here. So he was my first recruiter, and we would go and, you know, we had a meeting, I think we met him, and wasn't it the Long Beach? There was the first recruitment event that my family did ever. Cliff was there, and he's like this total surfer dude, you know, and so we were all laughing and joking and trying to recruit people, and he fit into our family, like, right away. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure – oh, no, we met you at
Nisei
Week. So in any case, we started doing drives with A3M because we had no other outlet to feel like we had any kind of control over this disease. Yeah. And especially for my family, who, you know, anyone who's met my family knows they rally in a heartbeat and in a big, big way. And so for them, it was really great because it was like, oh, okay, we can actually try and do something to help Chrissy. And so A3M was incredibly instrumental in giving my family a sense of we can do something, we can try and help, and we're going to change how this is for other patients too, and hopefully, obviously, with me. And then Cliff left, and we got Ayumi. And Ayumi was with us for probably, Cliff was with us, I think, about a year. And then Ayumi was with us. So Ayumi was with me for most of this whole journey. And, I mean, the first 3 years, we probably did somewhere in the range of 500 to 800 drives.
Wow. That's
my family.
Wow.
I mean, just in terms of at least someone was going out there with A3M, you know, over 3 years. And usually I went up to San Francisco to do one. And I had friends who also said, hey, I want to host a drive. How do I do it? So A3M was our.
I went to Chicago with a friend.
Yeah. Chicago, San Francisco. I think there was one in New York at one point. And A3M was always kind of our go-to. I mean, Be the Match was great, but I didn't have any kind of personal connection. And that's what I think A3M gave me, was that I feel like I'm being seen as someone who needs help, and they're dedicating this person to me. And it really, like, you know, like what you guys said, it gave me hope, but it also gave me comfort. Mm-hmm. And then it gave me a sense of, okay, I can at least try and do something, because it's very paralyzing when you have a disease that they say, okay, you need X, Y, and Z to happen in order to survive. And then you're told, well, X and Y can't happen. And, you know, so it can be very paralyzing. And I think specifically something that you guys do very well is giving patients, if they want that, the ability to feel like they could be very involved, right? As involved as they want to be, as not as, you know, if they don't, they don't. But I think for at least from our perspectives, having involvement has been helpful in our journeys to give us some kind of sense of like, well, you know, this happened to me and I don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's like, no, I'm not going to die. I'm going to survive. And we're going to figure this out. I think it also was hugely important that we saw over those first 3 years, I think there was like 4 or 5 matches that came, that we know came from the drives that we did together, the Kobata side and A3M. And there were 4 or 5 people that got their matches from those drives. And it was like, at least something is happening. If it wasn't for me, at least it was something, you know? But the most amazing part of it all was that within that first year, we met Athena. And my aunt registered Athena because she walked up to her and said, hey, you look like Chrissy. Right?
Yeah, she was like, are you half Japanese? And I was like, what's that have to do with? Because I already knew about it. My mom had registered at Nisei Week like right. years before, but I wasn't of age. No. And it was just coincidental because I had lost my aunt the year prior and I was working with, I did a LLS event, Leukemia Lymphoma Society event, but it was a walk and it was great. But I felt like, geez, I would like to volunteer in a more meaningful way. So when I saw the booth for A3M, I'm like, oh, I'd love to volunteer. So I because of Chrissy and because her story resonated, we were both in our 20s. And I was like, you know, I'm a very proud of like what I am. And people always ask what I am and being mixed race. It's just a topic of conversation quite often. And I was just like, I didn't know there is this negative thing associated with being mixed race. And I was like, and why are all these like new Facebook groups that were popping up? Because there's no like club per se. Now there are in colleges. Yeah. But at the time, there weren't a ton of places that were like mixed or HAPA you could go to. And there were, but there were a lot of online groups. So I was involved in a lot of like blogs and different things. And I'm like, nobody's talking about this online as a whole. And I was like, you know, I would love to try to help her, but also, like, just, you know, for my own self reasons to, like, honor my aunt's memory because I couldn't save her, like, to do something to give back, you know, because I did her. She died so quickly from lymphoma. Yeah. She didn't even have she died after her first round of chemo. Yeah. So, like, I thought in my mind, if I was in, you know, a situation where she needed a match and could have had a match, I would have done anything, you know, to find her match. So, yeah, it was really because of Chrissy that I even got involved with A3M. And and then because of the name being A3M, I was just like, oh, maybe mixed people, that are maybe not Asian would not come up to the booth as readily if, you know, there was a name that wasn't, that wasn't a little bit more broad. So so then that's where Mixed Marrow started. But yeah, I was very much inspired by Chrissy's family's energy. It was just so uplifting. So it was like, you know, don't be like so down on yourself. There's something you can do. And that was like the spirit I really took away from that was like, you know, you could either, you know, let this diagnosis to a family like ruin everybody and be depressed, or you could do something about it and like find the silver lining. And I felt like that's what it gave me healing too, you know, coming from seeing my aunt pass away. Like, and it's not an easy place to be. So it's like to find something positive out of that was like, really amazing. And I was just like, and they embraced me like I was family. Like I remember they'd be like, oh, we're having a dinner. I still even remember like what we had and like that. I was like, they're really inviting me in as if I'm at the dinner table with them. And I was just like, it was just awesome.
At our dinner table. Yumi's been at our dinner table. Yeah. We're like, oh yeah, come on in. Yeah.
So I like met I've met probably more cousins than I've met my own cousins in your family because you have a huge family. Like it was also awesome to see how your family like really channeled that like willingness to help because it is debilitating. Because when my aunt died, I had when she was sick and she was like near the end of her life, you just feel so like as a family member to watch somebody succumb to something, or even, you know, even when she was okay, even it's like I can't do anything. Like I am, my hands are tied, but you have this energy, like you want to do something. So to put it into a drive or put it into registering people, you at least feel like you're doing something, you know, for the greater cause or, you know, so that's what I feel like it was from day one, you know, it was just like,
Well, and I think for people that, you know, patients that don't have massive families like mine, right, or even aren't maybe that even close to their families, or they're more private, or they're not ready to, like, be that face, because I was willing and ready from day one to be that face, you know. I mean, I remember having a meeting with Sharon, and she's like, well, how comfortable are you with speaking and talking about this? I'm like, game on, you know, like, put me in front of whoever you want. And I mean, we did. I went in front of, you know, I went in front of crowds of, like, 500 people, 100 people, 10 people. You know, it was the range.
And media.
And I was in front of media. I was on it,
Mario,
you know.
Mario Lopez swap.
That's right, We had extra, you know. Yeah. I mean, there was lots of ways in which I was very willing to do that. But what I think in terms of A3M can offer also to patients who aren't as willing or aren't comfortable with being that, because there's plenty of people who
are like, hey, you know what, this is my private life. I don't want to have that, you know. They are, A3M can be sort of that advocate, that voice, that family sense, right, that support. So I think that's hugely important.
Yeah, so I definitely encourage anyone who has been diagnosed and finds out that they need a stem cell transplant or bone marrow transplant to reach out to us.
Yes.
We take pride in standing in the gaps for all our patients. And one thing that really rang true, and you've said it multiple times, is being that hope and helping. And help. Our mission has always been providing that hope for our patients in very seemingly hopeless situations. So one of my roles is to help facilitate a conversation and help the patient or the patient family to understand how we could channel that energy to get people added to the registry. And we do campaigns, we share stories, we go out to the communities, we'll go anywhere and everywhere with that there's a door open. Just this week, I came back from like a presentation at Cigar Lounge, where it was like a burn and learn, which is pretty cool.
Burn and learn. Yeah, I like that. We're going to use that somehow.
Yeah, and along with that too is, you know, been to a drive at Progressive, and they had us right outside their diagnostic, mm-hmm. Like vehicle inspection room. They had to vent out the room every 30 minutes or else we'll have carbon dioxide poisoning. We register people there, and we'll go anywhere. We had a lot of success in just going to places and finding people where they are and meeting them and getting them to register.
Yeah.
But we will provide as much as we can to help these patients. You know, we will play a role as a coach or security in different ways. From if there are too many people, like I know with their story, it got huge, and we will provide the role of like, hey, you know, this is getting a little too much. Let's jump in and help out so that at least the family and the patient could focus on themselves. So absolutely. We will be in there in the gap to speak on behalf of the patient to help and in any way possible. And that's what we're all about, is helping where we're needed.
Yeah.
Reach out to us, check out our website, and if you get our number, there will be someone there to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you've been throwing around the word, you know, register and swabbing. Can you just briefly kind of give the, I guess, the process, if someone wants to register, how it comes about, and maybe even if they get chosen to be a donor, kind of what that process mm-hmm. looks like mm-hmm. and how someone can get involved.
Yeah, so definitely. So registration process is pretty simple. You could join a few ways. First way is go to the website join.beatmatch.org/A3M Hope, H-O-P-E. And you'll be brought to our landing page to join the registry. If you're hesitant, you could actually read through that webpage to learn more about what it means to be a stem cell or bone marrow donor. You fill out some information, and you'll receive a swab kit in the mail, and you'll swab and mail it back. At which point...
And the swab is just a cheek swab.
Cheek swab, correct. Inside, yeah. And we're having you swab inside of your cheek. A lot of people think, oh my goodness, like, where am I sticking this swab? So it's inside the cheek in your mouth. There's clear directions, so please follow those directions. And then you send it back to us, at which point we'll digitize the tissue that's collected from the cheek swab to 10 genetic factors, and then it will be put onto the registry. Now, the chance of a person coming out as a match is about 1 out of 430. So it's not very high. But once a person is that comes up as a match, you'll receive a call from BeatMatch. It's probably going to be a call number from Minneapolis. So it's okay not to pick up, because we will leave a voice message as well as text you and call up your backup person, because that's asked during the registration process. And you'll hear, have someone like live on the phone with you to direct you what's going to happen. We'll let you know the age, gender, and diagnosis of the patient that you matched with, and which donation process you'll go through. 77% of the time after your match, we will typically ask you to donate peripheral blood stem cells, or PBSC for short. How that process works is 5 days prior to the actual donation, you'll receive an injection called filgrastim. Filgrastim basically moves your bone marrow into your bloodstream, and so there's more stem cells in you. Some people say that filgrastim or that process makes them feel like there's more of them, which is understandable because there's more cells. So on the fifth day of injection, it's also your transplant date. You'll go to the nearest transplant center wherever you are in the country, and they'll have you sit in a big comfy chair, and they'll link you up to a machine. The machine will pull out a little bit of blood at a time, and it'll spin the blood around really fast, separating the stem cells from the blood. And what's amazing is what's not collected will actually be returned back into your system. And it's just the stem cells that will be collected. So there's one line into the machine and another line out to another arm. So it's actually pretty cool. The major complaints that we've gotten about donating stem cells is one, I'm bored because it does.
It takes a while.
Yeah, it's like 4 to 6 hours. But we do provide like an iPad or a laptop for you to have. Yeah, Netflix and different things to watch. And you get to bring a family or a friend with you during that day. So you guys just hang out, which is actually really cool. I've heard people who've donated, they said that they've been treated like royalty. They're literally kings and queens.
As they should be. Yeah, they should be. They should be. Yep, they're saving lives.
Yeah. So they're just kind of hanging out. After donation, people have said that it just feels a little lethargic and tired. Very similar to like after you donate blood. So there's a little like fatigue involved, but people bounce back within 24 to 48 hours. You could go back to school or work the next day. Or the same day if you want. So there is this very small percentage that you may be asked to donate bone marrow. Please don't turn off the podcast because we said bone marrow. It is not as scary as people think it is. Not to put these shows on blast, but Grey's Anatomy, Ladder 49, there's a movie with 7 pounds with Will Smith.
They're all incorrect.
They're all incorrect.
Yeah.
Traumatized. Fully traumatized. But that's what people associate with bone marrow donation. Mm-hmm. And they see it very scary. But in reality, how it actually works is the individual's under general anesthesia, so there is no pain involved. I repeat, no pain involved. Marrow is extracted from the hip bone. It's a 1 to 2 hour process. You're in, you're under general anesthesia, and you're out. They use a specialized needle to extract marrow from the hip bone. And afterwards, you're able to go home. And for about 1 to 2 weeks, it feels like either you bumped a corner of a table, so there's some soreness in that. But also I've heard from others that it's like you were walking on ice and you slipped and fell on your butt. Like, that's kind of the feeling like that people
feel. If you bruise your tailbone,
that's what my mom described it as. It felt like she fell on her tailbone after giving.
So, I mean, it's not going to kill you.
No.
And what's amazing is your body will naturally regenerate bone marrow within 4 to 6 weeks. Typically, if you're asked to donate marrow, it means that you match with a child. Mm-hmm. So you save a child's life in that way. Or more importantly, the patient that you match with, their diagnosis specifically needs bone marrow. However, I've heard cases that if people are very adamant about donating PBSC only, it really depends on the patient's specific needs, but doctors would come back saying, oh, peripheral blood stem cell donation is possible to help the patient.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so like, there's a lot of technological advances in the medical field now. We're also looking into local anesthesia for bone marrow extraction, but they're getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done those. Yeah. We'll see about that.
But yeah, honestly, though, I myself am registered for about 12 years. I want to donate, but I can't because I'm not a match. I've had friends that I'm a little jealous of that registered, and within a year they got called up.
Oh, wow.
And they beat a match, flew her out to Washington, D.C. to donate. And so after donating bone marrow, the next day she was at the Washington, D.C. Zoo. Well, her mom was pushing her around in a wheelchair, but she was having fun the next day. And I see her at my church sometimes, and she's just back to her normal self. So it's really not something that we should be very fearful of.
So do it.
Yeah, it's very simple.
That's a great explanation of everything.
And I've never met one donor that has said they regretted it.
Yeah.
No. Even if they had the discomfort, like I've never in 10 years met one donor that was like, you know what, it was really awful, I shouldn't have done it.
Yeah,
no. Everybody, hands down, because I always ask them, would you do it again? They always say they would do it again. So it's not something you would ever regret, you know? And, you know, of course, anesthesia comes with complications, possibilities, but they run you through a rigorous amount of tests to make sure you are healthy. Yeah. So they wouldn't put you at risk.
No.
Right. To donate.
No.
I mean, along with that too, is once that phone call you get, we will schedule everything according to your schedule within reason, because the patient is definitely on a timeline. But we will cover like your schedule as much as possible. If there are lost wages, beat and match will cover that. Along with that too, like reimbursement for mileage would happen as well. So Beat a Match really makes everything as accessible as possible for the donor to actually donate. Beat a Match also helps with childcare. So there's a lot of things that Beat a Match does just to make sure that this individual who is matched has a very easy process of donating.
Absolutely.
There's someone with you every step of the way as a donor.
Yeah, that's great.
I have a question for you guys, if you don't mind. It just came up. But when I was searching, when I was in the hospital, there was a lot of advertisements for private donations of stem cells. So, you know, they market it as, okay, you save your umbilical cord or whatever, and you can help your own child. And my doctor at City of Hope, she was very much against that because she was trying to explain to me, even if you register, if your child needs it, you would still be able to provide it to your child as long as nobody has utilized that yet. And I guess that was a concern of a lot of parents. I was wondering if you guys get that question come up sometimes, like private donations versus public donations or register, you know.
Yeah. I mean, from knowing a little bit, like meeting with cord blood people actually in Canada, because I spent some time with their registry. I think a lot of companies unfortunately play on fears. So they shape this story that, oh, you need to bank your cord blood privately because your kid could get sick. And if you don't do it now, they're not going to have any chances. But like in your case, Alex, right, like you weren't a perfect. There's not as strict guidelines to match with cord blood. So even if your child's was used or not usable, you would still probably have a lot of other options. And it's so unlikely, like, you know, that you would need it. I mean, these diseases are quite rare, you know, even though you, all three of you have had it. Fortunately, like the odds of your child getting sick and needing it are pretty slim to how many are probably in there. And it's sad because I always tell people that are expecting, do your homework to make sure you're going into a reputable private blood banking system if that's what you decide to do, because I've heard horrible stories from, you know, people at like Cedars has their own banking for cord blood there, and they were saying they've heard of stories for these companies that say, you know, they're doing the same technology, but they're not freezing it properly, they're not, you know, maintaining things, or they don't collect enough cells, but they don't tell them, and people are paying exorbitant amounts on fees, and the people just didn't know better because they didn't, like, compare or ask around. And so it doesn't hurt if you are in a place that you can donate for free and just donate it. It is more than likely it will still be there. And if not, then there probably is a suitable one that could you could utilize. You know, but I don't think it's a realistic fear to have, like, that you're going to not have it. You know, there's always that chance, but I think it's more likely, especially the more that we put in the public registry, there's just going to be more options. And there are more hospitals that are participating every year. So just check Be the Matches website and see what hospitals participate. There was at one time a Duke study where you could, like, mail in somehow. There was, like, a kit where you could freeze it and send it somewhere. And so they were going to maybe develop a program like that. So anywhere you were, you could donate cord blood, but that hasn't been developed, like, perfectly yet. So that's something in the works. But I don't think the private banking thing is, you know, I don't want to say 100%, you know, depending on what your fears are, what diseases might run in your family or you think you might need it, or what the future can take from your cells. But from what I hear from cord blood banking people, they say, you know, make sure you're understanding, like, where you're banking, what you're doing it for, and what the odds are that you might use it. Like, really ask about the data. Yeah.
Do you guys at A3M actually see more matches, you know, people getting transplants from cord blood, or do you see, like, less of that? Because it seems like it's always been, like, a less popular method.
Depends on where they're being treated at, what hospital.
I don't think the numbers. I don't think a lot of doctors are as familiar to go down that more, not experimental, but it was trial for a while.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if it's actually.
Still some
it's not standard of practice. Yeah. I know that. But, like, you know, Dr. O. She didn't want to go down that route for you, but then Dr. Buddy did, you know? Yeah. So I think it's a lot dependent upon the doctor, you know, and what they're comfortable doing in terms of, right, transplants and where the research is right now. But I would bet that will become more as they get more patients successfully going through it, you know? Yeah. And just, like, the stem cell is sort of becoming the more popular way to do it as opposed to bone marrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just in the 10 years I was searching, the way in which I went through the procedure changed. You know, they had told me how it was going to happen in the beginning, and by the time I actually got to transplant, it was a completely different regimen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just really about medical advances, where the research goes, where the dollars for research also, you know, exists. So it's probably just going to be a matter of time where they start seeing more variety of how people get these transplants, right?
Because all I hear now is just stem cell transplant. Yeah, stem cell. That's it. I rarely hear bone marrow transplant.
I have not met one. Well, I've met people that have had it, but of the people that were on my floor, I don't think there was one person that was having an actual bone marrow transplant. I think it was all stem cells.
Yeah.
Yeah, you rarely hear about one person donating directly to another person right away.
Yeah.
Rarely.
I think they can do more with the stem cell. I don't know. I am not, even though I think I am, I'm not a doctor. So the point is, as we always say in our podcast, right, discuss all these options with your doctor. And if you are, you know, people who want to be donors, ask your own doctor too, you know? I mean, don't go on WebMD to just Google it, you know? Definitely that is not a good process. Look for the reputable, you know, organizations that can provide useful and helpful information, like Be the Match, like A3M. You know, you can look at, I mean, Cedars has their own program, you know, so there's definitely places that Johns Hopkins, you know, accredited, you know, organizations and hospitals have plenty of information on this stuff that you can research. So it's always important to make sure you kind of do your homework about any questions that may happen, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I think that was.
Yeah, there's a lot of options out there.
A lot of options.
It's not just, yeah, just one. Yeah. You got more options.
Right.
Which is wonderful.
Do you guys have anything else to add for the listeners out there of A3M?
No,
is there any big events coming up that you want to?
Well, I think we just want to thank you, all three of you, for sharing your stories. Because, you know, a lot of patients out there, you know, they're not at a place where, you know, we want to share their story, feel like, you know, they may be too vulnerable still. So I really applaud you guys for doing this podcast, for sharing your stories. It's going to help a lot of patients, hopefully recruit a lot of people. And it also motivates us to do our job, mm-hmm. you know, because there's times when it's like, you know, we're feeling down, you know, we're getting rejected by people at drives. And, you know, when we think about our patients, it, you know, inspires us to do better and to do more. So I want to thank all of you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Time, yeah. Maybe one more time, just where people could register your website.
So the website is join.bethematch.org/A3M Hope. Or you could also text to join. The number is 61474. And the message is A3M. Hope, and then send it. You'll receive a link within about 10 seconds, and you'll use that link to register. Also, check out our website for if you want to just come talk to us about volunteering. We offer internships as well. So look at our website for dates. We go all over Southern California.
Yeah, so, volunteers are always welcome, right?
Oh, totally.
And they're in fun places, too. Yeah. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
Burn and learn.
Oh, yeah, burn and learn.
That's a great name.
With UCLA, we are doing working with the gymnastics team, working with the UCLA football team, and really trying to get all sports athletes involved because we're looking for anyone and everyone to help spread that word and awareness. So I really appreciate y'all sharing your stories because I know with the Asian American community, there's a lot of guilt and shame in diagnosis and sharing stories and being vulnerable. So thank you so much for being a voice to those who don't feel comfortable in sharing their stories because it allows them to hear and understand what they're going through.
I think what's really amazing what you guys do also is your it used to be a dinner, your annual dinner.
Benefit dinner
mm-hmm. and now it's a luncheon. And every year you guys have a donor and recipient meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember seeing the first one, my first year when I got diagnosed, it was
a tear jerker.
It's I think that's amazing. I love that you guys do that. So
It's September 26th
yes.
in Buena Park. Please come out. Check our website for details.
Yeah, it's a really wonderful event. I've been going for the past 4 or 5 years, and it just gets better every year. So.
And we also have a 5K that we started doing annually. The next one will be next year in the spring. So it'll be in 2021. So keep your eye out for that date as we plan that one. But that's another great event that kind of brings everybody together for like a good cause in a fun way. So, yeah.
Awesome. Love it.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for having us.